to sing this song for the healing of the world.
Welcome to Spirit in Action. My name is Mark Helpsmeet, and each week we bring you visits and conversations with people doing healing work for this world, hearing what they're doing and what inspires them and supports them in doing it. Welcome to Spirit in Action. One of the sources of the rich cadre of authors and activists I have here on Spirit in Action is the promotion of writers done by Peter Bermudez of GLPR. That's Gail Leander Public Relations. And it was through Gail that I was first acquainted with GLPR, though Peter has been at the helm since 4 years ago. In many ways, the mission of GLPR dovetails perfectly with that of Northern Spirit Radio, helping find and raise up the voices of those making this world better through their ideas and writing. GLPR has done promotions for so many vital and powerful change leaders over the decades, like Dr. Helen Caldicott, the Dalai Lama, Francis Morlapé, James Lowen, Chuck Collins, and 1,000 others, aiding them in getting their ideas and insights out to the wider world. We have production help today from Andrew Jansen. There are a few more minutes of this interview in the uncut version on northernspiritradio.org. So check it out and post a comment when you visit our site. Right now, Peter Bermudez joins me via Zoom from Arlington, Massachusetts. Peter, how great to talk to you today for Spirit in Action.
A pleasure, Mark. I'm pleased to join you.
It's especially notable because I've talked to you for years because of all of the authors you've pointed my way. So I've talked to you. This is actually the first time I actually see you while I'm talking to you. How scary is it to see me face to face, this terribly adversarial interrogator that I am?
Honestly, I'm tickled, Mark. It's good to see you. And I think the image matches the voice and the spirit and the person that I've talked to. Honestly, right. I took a look at records. I think 2011 was the first time that we connected. So 13 years or so we've been working together.
One of the early books that I remember interviewing, it had to be within the first 2-3 years I did it, was with Gail's wife, Betsy.
Oh, yeah.
Class Matters, class, whatever.
Yep, that's right.
And you know, it was her PhD thesis or something like that. It was so influential for me. I still bring results of that up to people when I'm talking to them. Just the difference in how humor is done between social classes. And a lot of people don't get that. And since I generally associate with upper middle class folks, you know, university educated, that kind of thing, there's a limited sense of humor. Oh, you can't joke about that. Well, it could if we were working class. And they would. And they'll look at our humor and say it's sterile.
Well, I'll relay that back to Betsy, because certainly she would be appreciative of the nuance, both that you recognized in her work, as well as the general appreciation. Yeah. And she's still at it, in fact, with a book coming out in the spring of 25.
Well, I've got to do that. I did get an email from her a year ago or something that I never ended up responding to, some kind of a paper article or something that she had put out. So let's talk about what glprbooks.com. Give our listeners the whole backstory of your promotional efforts.
Sure. GLPR stands for Gail Leander Public Relations. So back in 1992, Gail Leander, who's a neighbor, a friend, a colleague of mine, started GLPR because she had a friend who wanted to get some more attention for a book that she wrote, and her publisher wasn't helping her in the way that she was hoping. So Gail, if I remember correctly, sort of, you know, between jobs, oh, I think I can put some time and energy in and see what I can do. She amassed a nice schedule for this friend of hers, who is an author, and she decided at that point, I think maybe I can parlay this into a business and at once connect my skill set with a life mission and supporting progressive authors in ways they aren't necessarily being supported by their publishing house. Fast forward to today, and that virtually is what GLPR continues to do. You know, really try to match progressive authors on political and social issues with shows, radio and podcasts, increasingly shows across the country, to get their message out to a wider public and sort of move the needle a little bit on the conversation that's happening in the country.
GLPR, therefore, has been around for, appears to be, 32 years. You've been part of it, I think, for 24 years.
Yeah, 96. So I think 28 years.
28 years. Okay.
Yeah.
So I was a math major. I should be able to do better than that. Yeah. So she brought you in 4 years into the efforts. What led you here? I understand you were a school teacher before. You also worked for some publicity.
Publishing houses, yeah.
You did that, and then you connected with Gail.
So I think the way it happened was I was a teacher at the time, an elementary school teacher. My first child was born, and I recognized in myself an inability to make peace with the amount of work I felt I needed to do in order to be an effective teacher, on the one hand, and the time that I wanted to spend with my then new child. My wife and I decided that, okay, maybe I should make a job shift. Without anything to go to, mind you, I left a teaching job. And it just so happened that Gail needed a little bit of help with a project. It ends up being The Good Heart, which is a collaboration between Father Lawrence Freeman and the Dalai Lama about interfaith dialogue. And I helped her get radio for that. It just so happens that the publishing house that created that book was local and was looking for a publicist. So I then worked for a number of years for that publishing house and then shifted to another publishing house doing publicity work, and then came back to GLPR on a part-time basis, began to get my own clients through Gail, to the point that 4 years ago when she retired, she said, "Would you like to shepherd this venerable institution?" I said, yeah, let's do that. That's where we are today.
Again, you made it clear in some of that history, GLPR provides this publicity, this outreach effort, this raising up the voice of a number of authors who are on the progressive end of the scale.
Yes.
And that's important to it. Is that important to you because of your philosophy degree? Is that what got you there?
I don't... Well, I think philosophy may be a piece of it, Mark. Absolutely. I think probably more foundational is just, I don't know if you would call it a set of values and hopes that I grew up with. I am a recovering PK, that is to say a preacher's kid.
Which flavor?
United Church of Christ. So in the Protestant tradition, on the progressive end of things, I felt it important in whatever livelihood I chose that there was a connection with the outcome. Hopefully happy and sharp kids who could make a difference in the world as a teacher, or a more informed public that is getting information that can try to help us. I think all of the projects that GLPR champions are projects that aim towards some brand of equality, be it economic equality or gender equality or racial equality. And those were the issues, and that was the commitment that I wanted to make in whatever I considered my livelihood. And GLPR, I think, offered a good way to do that and marry with it the set of skills that I think I bring to the table.
You've got a wonderful list of, I think it's over 1,000 folks that you've dealt with, authors. I think it's always authors, right? It's, you don't promote speaking tours or anything, do you?
No, there are two notable outliers in that list of over 1,000 clients. And they were two videos, actually. One video that dealt with 9/11, put out by the Media Education Foundation at UMass Amherst. And the other was a video about Second Amendment rights and what that includes and what that doesn't include.
You've had some major big names that you've represented. The Dalai Lama certainly stands up there for me. But,
yeah,
you know, someone like Frances Moore LaPay, when I became a vegetarian back in 1976, her book, Diet for a Small Planet, that first week it got placed in my hand because I didn't know anything about that kind of stuff. Kitty Dukakis.
That's right.
James Lowen, I don't know how many people recognize him as much. I've interviewed him about two of his books before he died.
Lies My Teacher Told Me.
Yes. But possibly, and I'm not positive about this, the most prolific author you've represented is Larry Tye. Did I get that right?
You absolutely did. Actually, Mark, that stretches back before GLPR and you connected. Larry's back... Well, it was shortly after I started working with Gail in a book that he did on Eddie Bernays, The Father of Spin, is that first book. And he's gone on to regularly write best-selling books on biographies on Satchel Paige and Bobby Kennedy.
Superman.
Yes, yes. And he has a new one coming out actually soon entitled The Jazz Men about Count Basie, Duke Ellington, and Louis Armstrong.
He's such a vivacious storyteller in his books. You're normally representing books, as we said, except for those two videos.
That's right.
In the case of Betsy Leander Wright, that happened to be her thesis converted into a book. But there must be all kinds of opportunities for people who write. I mean, now people are putting their things out on the web as opposed to writing a paper book. That's got to be affecting what you're doing.
It is. I think maybe more than simply on the web books, the trend that has required some rethinking from people like me is the self-publishing work, which used to be, if you look back 2 decades, I'd say, when the trend began, it was something that was very difficult for a publicist to place because there wasn't the normal or the traditional vetting done by a publishing house. If a book comes out by a publishing house, then, you know, NPR shows and other radio hosts will say, oh, okay, it must be a legitimate book if it's been published by a particular publishing house. And when people started publishing on their own, that mooring, whether it was accurate or not, was no longer available. And it became harder for somebody like me to say, you should really listen to what this person has to say, and here's why. That, I think, is the trend that in the publishing world, that it's required a little thought from people like me to make the case for the authors.
One of the things that's come with those books that are, I think they're rushed through more quickly. They don't have years of editing, re-editing, filtering, that kind of way. There's a lot more typos in books these days than there used to be. Have you noticed that?
Yes, absolutely. In the books that come across my desk are frequently from wonderful publishing houses. I don't know necessarily what that can be traced back to. I think time is certainly an issue. And if it's a self-published book or some houses that provide a lighter editorial eye to a project, they just make it through because there weren't those careful eyes looking at it.
Yeah, I think they call it efficiency. We call it slapdashedness. Isn't that a good word? I don't know.
I think it is. I think a good entry into the lexicon.
Well, let's talk about the list of topics that these authors represent. I mean, you've got an extensive, I don't know if it's extensive, I don't know if it's a complete list of what you represent on your website. What are the things that are important to GLPR?
It is complete, I will say. That list of clients that GLPR has represented stretches all the way back to 92, and I don't think misses anyone. And, you know, certainly there's been an evolution, Mark, over that 30 plus years of the topics that are represented. And I think it sort of mirrors what's going on in our culture. You know, today, as I suggested, the common thread, I think, between all of the projects is an aim toward equality. Economic equality is a big piece, and its counter, of course, economic inequality. And that's frequently the place that we start from, the inequality point. That is a big piece of the work that I do. And of course, that means that it starts with an interest that I have, and it ends with having sufficient relationships with media people to support those kinds of projects. But, you know, an example is the Wealth Hoarders. Chuck Collins is a person that you know well.
Yes, he's wonderful.
He is fabulous, a nationally respected voice on income inequality and the racial wealth divide. Wealth Hoarders, you know, looked at how the exceedingly wealthy shelter their monies. And it shows sort of their disregard for this idea of the commons that we could all benefit from and to which we all pay if we pay estimated taxes or every April 15th. Tax the Rich is another book by an organization called the Patriotic Millionaires, you know, looking to subvert this notion that the wealthy do not want to pay their taxes. Yes, well, there are many that do want to shoulder what they believe are, you know, their responsibilities. So economic inequality, racial inequality, and I can talk particular projects too, but peace issues. And that might take, for instance, somebody I think that you're going to be speaking with, one of my clients, Brad Wolf, about his collection of writings by the renowned peacemaker Philip Berrigan.
Yeah, I'm on page 15 right now.
Well, I think you'll enjoy it. And certainly the conversation with Brad, I think, promises to be a good one in terms of talking about Phil, the context that he came of age in and that he was responding to, and where those writings might guide us today, even though he died over 20 years ago. So those are the sorts of conversations that I take great relish in helping to come to fruition. The hopes, of course, being that in addition to immigration issues, talking about the political landscape in the country, particularly as we move toward a rather important presidential election in November, is to try and seed meaningful conversations so that people can come away with more information, perhaps a greater perspective, and a sense of what they can do to add their voices to what's going on.
You didn't mention environmental sustainability. That's certainly one of the topics you've hit.
It is true. And it, you know, I think one of the questions you had suggested maybe you'd like to get into is the question of how have topics that GLPR has championed over the years sort of evolved? And certainly environment is one, and you're absolutely right. We continue to do work on projects that are focused on, I mean, at this point, largely climate crisis. It has changed over the years, though. Likewise, when Gail first started, religion was a relatively significant staple of the work that GLPR did. LGBTQ plus rights and issues was a piece of it. Education, sort of writ large in general, was a big piece. And while those issues continue to be a part of what GLPR does, they've evolved, I think, probably as a result largely of our culture and the conversation going on in our culture, and also the need for us to be a little bit more focused because of who we can reach out to. That landscape has changed a little bit. Back when Gail first started, she remarked on how she was one of the few progressive book publicists in the entire landscape. Largely, publishing houses were the people conducting that kind of work. And there weren't really freelancers who were out doing that work. And over the subsequent 20 years, with the evolution of what's going on in publishing houses, a lot of people came out of publishing houses and set up their own shops. So the other opportunities available to authors shifted dramatically over that time. And I think that required sort of a rethinking and a retooling on a GLPR's part.
I do want to make sure that people understand the distinctives that make GLPR especially valuable. You've never sent a clunker my way. That's one thing. But of course, you know, you before you brought something to me, Peter, you always said, well, is this something that's going to be particularly suiting to who Mark is trying to reach out to, how he's trying to talk to people? On the other hand, I looked through the thousands of people you've represented, and almost all of those are interesting, valuable. They would be really exciting to me.
So I should pitch you everyone, Mark.
Well, except that my eyesight's going to go bad. I don't know. You must have to read an awful lot of books.
Everyone, cover to cover, I do. Increasingly, I'm finding that I need to hold them a little bit further from my eyes.
I tried going through your list and try and note all of those I'd interviewed, but then I found some of them that didn't come to me through you as well. Of course, because there's...
Sure.
Well, it's like Ken Grossinger, Artworks, who I just interviewed recently for my Spirit in Action program. He came to me through Cy Kahn, the musician, and a person who you've also represented his books.
Right? Exactly that, yep.
Creative Community Organizing and others.
That's right.
We intersect in many different ways, but I found, I don't know, 20. One of them I ran into was Annie Rochelle Lancelotto.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know everyone? Because some of them were Gales.
Exactly right. So I probably know the name, but I don't necessarily know those earlier projects, like Gale obviously would.
I'm not sure if Daniel Hunter's book came to me through you, but I so love that book. He writes it as like a murder mystery about campaigning against casinos in Philadelphia. It was so captivating.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, some of the books that you've represented are largely scholarly texts.
Yep.
Talk about the distinctives that you use in picking out which ones you want to represent. Are scholars okay or are they good? I mean, as upper middle class people, liberals, we're ivory tower liberals, right? We're supposed to love that stuff.
Yeah, no, scholars are okay. And they're good, or they can be, of course. They're not necessarily, but by all means. I mean, I represent a lot of scholars. And in fact, one of the things that I enjoy most, you referred to my philosophy background earlier, I love to engage with nuanced, complicated ideas and then try to help my clients translate them for a mainstream, a lay audience who wouldn't necessarily understand the vocabulary or the particulars that they reference maybe in a scholarly book. But that's a piece of the work that I love to do. And I think, what do I love? I love to work with clients and help prepare them for the project. One of the radio people I work with recently said, you help me in the work that I do in getting me materials so that I can prepare for a meaningful, substantive conversation. But you also obviously have done some work helping your clients ready themselves for the work of an interview. I mean, that's a piece of the work that I relish insofar as I mean, I think of the work of GLPR, one of the pieces is helping prepare public intellectuals who are going to go out into the world and help translate their work that might remain in the academy or particular publications and translate it for a public that needs to hear it, but wouldn't necessarily naturally intersect with it. So that's certainly a piece of the work that I enjoy doing. And when I get that appreciation from clients, that means something to me, you know, that you help me see my work in a different way, and you help prepare me for this project that helped not only for these interviews around this particular book, but also thinking about presenting to a class or presenting in other forums where, you know, thinking about the public and how you want to send your message to them actually makes a difference. So in terms of looping back to the question is asked, Mark, in terms of, you know, what are those elements that I look for when I see a new project, a potential project? Am I excited by it? Is it something that engages me? That's important because I am authentic when I represent my clients. I'm not blowing smoke up anybody's skirt when I say, you should really talk to this person. I really believe that on the basis of the read that I have of their work and my understanding of them as people. That has meaning to me. So it needs to be a piece of work that interests and excites me. Do I want to be engaged with this for a few months? And it needs to be something that I think I can help with. You know, there are some wonderful projects that come my way that I'm interested in. And I think, you know, I really don't know the right people for you. You would be better served going to another publicist. I don't necessarily know who that publicist is, but I know that it's not me. And I'm transparent with that fact when I feel if that's the case. So it needs to be something where I think I can do a good job for you. And it's additionally something that I think can make a difference when it enters the public consciousness. Is this a message that could conceivably be of benefit? And is this person the person to carry it to the public? Those are all things that I think about as I consider potential clients these days.
Folks, today for Spirit in Action, we're speaking with Peter Bermudez. The company GLPR is promotional for progressive leaning, and I want to ask you more about this in a moment, Peter, progressive authors and raising up their voice. And it was important for me to have him here today because in some ways I feel like his mission and my mission are complementary, supplementary, or part of stream of consciousness. Many people have great ideas, and if you can't get them out to other minds, they don't nurture the world in the way that we'd like to. So Norden Spirit Radio, my website, nordenspiritradio.org, our purpose is to help lift up those voices of people doing healing work for the world. Now, that's the phrasing I've chosen to use for it. It's certainly peace and social justice, environmental, all the things that are listed in glprbooks.com, all of them are things that I want to lift up. But very frequently, people do not have the know-how to do that lifting up. They don't have the venue to share their ideas with the wider populace. So that's what I try and do with the Norden Spirit Radio programs, both Spirit in Action and Song of the Soul. Right now, we're syndicated on some 35 stations nationwide. And that's in addition to all the people who listen directly via our site or via podcasts where we're represented. I want to talk to you more about that, Peter. But in any case, folks, do come to northernspiritradio.org. Check out our site. Check out the thousands of people that we've interviewed and raised up the voices of. And please then go also to glprbooks.com and see if maybe you have a book that needs to be represented also through the work of Peter Bermudez. I always want to lift up all of these community radio stations across the country where my programs are syndicated. But I wanted to ask you, Peter, about the outlets that you're directing your authors to. Again, it's radio, I think, more than television. Do you do television a little bit too?
No, used to. Back, you know, the first maybe decade that GLPR worked, reached out to print, television, and radio. And I don't know, 15 years ago or so, made the decision to really focus on radio. And increasingly, that's becoming podcasts are becoming a piece of that. And largely because, Mark, that's the place where substantive conversation can still be found. You know, television, it's tough to get more than a couple minutes, if you can get a couple minutes. And by and large, the people that GLPR works with are people who need some space and time to provide a context for their work. They tend to represent ideas and issues that are not necessarily in the mainstream of our media coverage, and therefore they need that time to speak more fully to their work.
Well, and there's a number of books that GLPR represented in the early days that I've seen less as the years have gone by, or maybe I haven't. There's kind of a women's spirituality, the goddess raising that up. And I don't know if that's because there's less books written that way, fewer books written about that. So this is a question that I have, the focus of GLPR and whether it, to put it bluntly, does it raise up the heady over the heartfelt? And by the way, because people like Larry Tye, I think, do both so well. I don't think it's an either or exactly. But one of the things that I have the opinion that progressives have too often given away the heartfelt in favor of the intellectual rigor. And there's got to be a tension there, I think. But do you think that there's been a change in GLPR, the authors you've represented, the books you've represented, related to that?
You know, Mark, there may well be. And certainly, particularly over the past 4 years, where I've been the person ultimately deciding, you know, what projects become GLPR projects and which don't, whereas Gail prior to that certainly was the person who largely was making those decisions, certainly in some cases with my input, but largely her own decisions. It has changed, I suppose. My wife would suggest that I tend to be a person who resides in my head quite a bit. And therefore, I suppose that I do resonate with projects of that sort more. That said, I think as you offer, I think a lot of GLPR clients bring both head and heart to their work. It would certainly be my hope that it's not doing away with the heart, as that's a central piece of what I think GLPR's work is, the work that needs to be done in the world. And I think of my life and sort of what I hold valuable, but it could be a piece of that. But I think the other piece maybe that is worthwhile entering into the conversation to a certain extent is it a chicken or an egg kind of conversation insofar as, I mean, I am not a creator of radio shows or of podcasts. So what I have to work with is the shows that are out there that seem to be a good match for what GLPR represents and the work that it champions. I think there has been, in fact, I talked to a potential client yesterday who framed it this way. He said, I don't want to do sort of new aged, I think the phrase that he used was woo-woo. And I think that, you know, what remains, I think, a prevalent framing of shows, of books, of a genre that goes headlong into matters of the heart. I say that by way of saying, when I'm thinking about a project, and this goes to, can I represent this person well? If I've already agreed with myself that, yeah, this is a cool project and this is somebody that I could work with for a while, can I represent them well and can I get them out to shows to help them broadcast what they're talking about? Those shows need to exist. And I think the prevalence of shows that speak to matters more of heart than of head, they're less than they used to be. I think that's one of the undercurrents that has changed over the past 25, 30 years. And therefore, if I get a certain kind of book, I like this book, but I don't know how I would position it to make for a successful campaign.
Yeah, I find it interesting, Peter, that as you just mentioned, you know, you don't do the interviews. You're not doing radio, right?
Right.
But I have no doubt that you could do it. You frequently, you send out with us lists of potential questions, topics we can talk about. You've done a lot of the thinking and the reading that I do in preparing for my interviews. You've got a good radio voice.
I thank you.
And it's probably not where you want to concentrate your time right now because you've got a plate that's more than full and overflowing, right? But I'm very aware that you've got the abilities for it. So yet what you've done is actually link these authors who need their voices raised up, providing this invaluable service to people who are doing the radio broadcasts. Talk about some of the people you deal with, besides, of course, Northern Spirit Radio, which is,
of course,
invaluable. But who do you deal with?
I deal with other community radio stations across the country and people like you who GLPR has worked with for two decades. I work with Pacifica radio folks across the country in sort of the five hubs around the country, as well as people who are nationally syndicated. I work with NPR affiliates, or rather, I work with NPR producers and hosts at local affiliates across the country, at regionally syndicated, you know, like Wisconsin Public Radio, Northeast Public Radio, Kansas Public Radio, those sorts of folks, up to the national NPR shows as well. And for those people who aren't familiar, Pacifica Radio would be, I think, if we were to draw a political map, Pacifica Radio would come down to the left of an NPR, for instance. And community radio is really sort of across the board. Although I think, as you noted earlier, really the people that I work with are people who would populate the center to left side of a political frame. We used to work with some conservatives who were interested in meaningful, respectful dialogue, even though they were going to disagree with my clients. That was something people were interested in.
Wow, vanishing species there.
And they are, probably for the past decade. I mean, there's really been nobody that I've been able to connect my clients with who would be on the right side of the political spectrum. Regrettably, the interest in having respectful dialogues is gone. It seems as if shows more on the right side of the political spectrum that had been interested in having respectful dialogue simply sort of died on the vine, if you will. So that collection of the radio world, community radio, Pacifica, NPR, are largely the constellation of folks. There's some commercial radio that I work with regularly, but not a lot.
I somehow suspect that there are people who would love some of these books, probably have represented some of them, but are such big names, they don't have time to read a book like I do. So, you know, when you send me a 250, 300-page book and I spend time reading it, that's just not what most people have time to. Scott Simon, who at least was or is a Quaker, I'm sure he's interested in the stuff, and I don't think he has time for a two-minute piece to be able to do this.
Well, maybe he's an outlier in that world because I think he does read. I have some evidence of this, Mark. However, yeah, I think at that scale, at that order, certainly Scott Simon, certainly Terry Gross, I mean, they have producers who will do that work. So really the question is the project something of interest to them? And if it is, then they'll have a producer, likely, who does the reading and who sort of ferrets out the questions that they might want to ask. And I'm sure that at some level they engage with the book so that they can understand it in conversation, but might rely on the input of a producer.
And folks, we're speaking with Peter Bermudez, GLPR, in case you have trouble remembering those letters, come via northernspiritradio.org. But it was Gail Leander Public Relations Books, glprbooks.com. Again, northernspiritradio.org. I'll link you up to Peter, who has been lifting up the voice of so many people who've got wonderful ideas, insights, and it's even reporting on the good changes that have happened in the world and the things that still need to be changed. One of the most notable names I saw in your stable of authors is Amy Goodman.
Oh, yes.
Democracy Now! When I've looked at stations that might be interested in carrying Spirit in Action, my program, I've said any place that carries Democracy Now!, Amy Goodman, is going to like my stuff as well. But there is a difference.
There is. Absolutely.
Is Amy someone you direct people to?
Well, so here's the funny thing about Amy Goodman. And actually, I think it's noble as well. But Amy Goodman was, as you note, a client of GLPR's. However, in pitching her for Democracy Now!, she has a policy of not accepting pitches from freelance publicists like myself. And I think the logic is the ability of an author of something important that Democracy Now! Viewers might want to see should not have to be a person who can afford to pay a freelance publicist. The ability to pay money should not be what keeps an author from getting on the show, I think, is sort of the logic, which I appreciate. You know, anybody, if the idea is compelling, should be able to get on the show and talk to Amy and share their work. And so she, I think, erected this wall to make it very clear that people who can afford to pay do not have a leg up over those who might not be able to.
Equality and equity in action, I guess, right there.
Fair enough.
I'm also interested, Peter, in some of the clients who've come to you, said want to be represented, and who you turned away. Now, I don't know if naming names is good or not. When I moved up to Eau Claire from Milwaukee here, both in Wisconsin, when I moved up here, three of us co-owned Infinity Software Solutions. This is before I was doing radio. So we're doing computer programming and consulting. And we made a decision of what we wanted our company to do. We're working with computers, but you can use computers for the good of the world or bad. And helping people do their business is just fine, but we didn't want to help the dark side. So we had that filter that we wanted to apply. We very seldom applied it in a negative sense. Mostly we reached out to people who we thought we'd like to help raise up. But when Nestle came to us, they have a plant here in Eau Claire, concern about their corporate politics, and particularly how they were causing problems for poor people across the world, infant formula stuff. So we said, thank you, but no, we're not going to work with you.
Yeah.
Who have you had to do that with?
Honestly, Mark, I think our situations are different. And I think people in thinking to come to me do a little bit more self-selection. So
wait, you're saying Rush Limbaugh never came to you, said?
Never, surprisingly, came to me. Never came to me. It was good for him and me and Gail. But so I think people do a significant amount of the self-selection. So in other words, if they come to talk to me or Gail before me, they're likely landing somewhere. They can see their work in the client list on the GLPR website, for instance, right? It fits that kind of list generally. So really, by the time that they come to me, it's really more a question of, am I sort of jazzed by this work? Would I like to work with them? And can I mount a successful campaign on their behalf? You know, it generally tends to more those kinds of questions than, do I support their values? Do I want to help get their word out to a wider public? Usually the answer is probably yes.
I'm still thinking that there's some people, you got their book, you read it and you said, or you talked to them and you said, this is not going to fly. And I don't want to name names particularly, but I think that must happen.
Honestly, I can only remember once, and I don't remember the author's name actually. He's a nice guy. He might have been from the UK, and he wrote a book about equality generally. We had a difference of opinion about economics. You know, I had come to a point where I made a decision about what I will represent having to do with economics and what I don't want to represent. And I think his heart was in the right place, but he was more of, I guess I would say, maybe a compassionate capitalist. And I've come to think different things about capitalism and how much we can soften it to actually be a tool of helping people realize their gifts in the world, make a difference for their communities.
So an author like Gar Alpovitz, I think he's working within capitalism of sorts. I don't know. He's radically changing how it works. And I think in a beautiful way. I loved his ideas in the books that you've sent my way. So this compassionate capitalist versus Gar, the other guy's just further along the continuum.
I think that's the case. You know, Marjorie Kelly is another recent client of mine. Wealth Supremacy was her book. Ted Howard was a collaborator of hers on a previous project working. They both work for the Democracy Collaborative. I think they are scouting out an economic space beyond capitalism without giving it a name. I think part of the reason is that other names become problematic because we only have certain illustrations of what they can be. And they're not necessarily illustrations that we want, but does capitalism as it's been serve us? And by us, I mean us, right? All of us, not the top 1%, not the top 20%, but all of us. And my perspective on that is evolving. So I think in very specific and very few cases have I drawn a line where I said, I don't think I can represent that on the basis of content. As opposed to on the basis of, do I have the relationships that are going to serve you in getting this work out?
You haven't commented specifically about the aesthetics of the writing. I mean, some people are just not good communicators. Some people of great purpose, of great ideas, can't bring it across. And I imagine that sometimes that has to happen because I've been told I have a voice that's made for radio. I've also been told I have a face that's made for radio. But
not true.
But some people just don't convey well.
It's true.
Have you had to turn them away that way too?
Not so much in my tenure here. I think what does happen sometimes, Mark, is there is a need to help. And I might have sort of pointed to this a little bit earlier. There is a need to help my clients sort of translate the writing that they've done for a more mainstream audience. And another piece of it is, and I think this is what you were alluding to, or a piece of it, that somebody wrote a book does not necessarily mean that they're going to be a superlative speaker about their book or the issues that they write about. It can be very different. And sometimes that enters into the sort of mentoring and coaching that I provide in order to help them get ready for a campaign.
So that's one of the services GLPR Books offers then, right?
Absolutely.
You're actually a coach. Do you walk them through interviews? How do you do this?
Yeah. So you spoke of the list of interview questions, for instance, that I create as a result of my read of their book. And then I provide to radio hosts and producers like you, more to help you think about it than necessarily prepare for it. But if it helps you prepare, then great. But those kinds of lists, it's a means of preparing my author. Okay, now they have a list of 2 pages of interview questions. Are these questions that I can speak to? What illustrations might I use in speaking to them? What statistics might I pull out? That's an intellectual exercise for them. And then certainly if they're willing, I will run a mock interview with them. So I will select a number of questions, some of which are on the list, some of which are not, some of which are intentionally meant to put them in a difficult position and help them figure out, okay, how do I pivot out of this question that I think maybe isn't going to be particularly illuminating and go to something that I think would? We absolutely run those kinds of exchanges before a campaign to help them get ready and feel more comfortable.
Well, let's focus in a little bit more about Peter Bermudez himself. Some of you has reflected through the clients that you want to bring in and that you've worked with. I was wondering if you felt particularly changed by any of the books you've read. I'm certainly it adds to your intellectual riches, maybe your heart, but are there some that you can put your finger on that say, I was a different person after that?
That's a tough one, Mark, because you're right. I don't think there's a project that I've worked on that hasn't changed me in some way. That said, in looking over particularly more recent titles of projects, a couple rose to the top. There's a book, I want to say 6 years ago now, Voting in Indian Country. It explores the historical marginalization of Native Americans in this country, but particularly in terms of voting. And it highlighted a small group of scholars who in 2016 helped enfranchise a group of Native Americans in the run-up to the election. I was like, why does that sort of stick out for me? The author was a gem, number one. She was absolutely keen to talk to people about this work. And also, I mean, it was a wonderful illustration of a small group of committed people making a difference. I mean, here was an Indian reservation that was not going to be allowed to vote because they didn't have street numbers. So this group of scholars went about, and it was partially using computers and partially simply applying street numbers to their houses, which hadn't been a tradition that they used, in order to gain them the vote. This was a beautiful example of that Margaret Mead quote, yes? That was one. The Water Defenders, and you might actually have interviewed Robin Broad and John Cavanaugh in relationship to the Water Defenders. It was
actually, I didn't. Well, you screwed up not getting them to me. Oh, my goodness.
Son of a gun, right? I don't know why, Mark. It's back in 21. So it was in the height of the wackiness of the pandemic. So I'm sorry. They'd probably be happy to still talk to you. And the relevance of that story remains. It told the story of El Salvadorans who turned back a wealthy, connected multinational mining company in their country. There was a group of people who lacked the resources that many of us in the North have. They lacked a political system that should theoretically welcome their concerns. And they changed the course of their country and what happened there. And again, to the same point, a small group of committed people in significant danger to their own lives and their communities nonetheless took up this challenge. And I mean, those are a couple that, yeah, bring me to tears sometimes, Mark, if I think about them and I think about those efforts. You know, so much to do and so much to be committed to.
When I was asking you about which books changed you, one that changed me along the way, and it was fiction based on reality too, was Ruby Fruit Jungle, Rita Mae Brown, which I read back in 1976. Mm-hmm. Finished reading it, and it so changed me internally about my own prejudices, my own way of viewing the world, that after that date in early 1976, I was a different person. And I'm just wondering if any more of them hit you in that way.
You know, if we're going to go back that far, Mark, maybe around 1980, I think I was a sophomore in high school. Les Miserables was a book that impressed me.
It impressed me a lot, except I only read it in French.
Bless you.
in 1981.
I not only did not read the French, I read the abridged version, which I think itself weighed in at like 350 pages opposed to, I think, the 1400 or so that Hugo originally wrote. But that was one that I can absolutely reach back to and say, wow, I don't know that I was mature enough to read it at that time. I mean, I guess I was
in
in
high
some
school.
sense.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I could fully appreciate it as a, as a sophomore in high school, but I did to the point that it continues to impress me, you know, almost 50 years later.
That's a great one. Yeah. One of the books that I'm not sure if you sent it my way, I think you did, was the one by Jeremy Lent.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That one,
absolutely.
The first chapter of the book, just my mind got shifted so dramatically.
Yes. The pattern and instinct. And wow, I remember talking earlier about, you know, sort of the process of talking to a potential client and going through that and thinking about the project and how, if it's a match. And I remember being so impressed by the sheer scope and magnitude of what he was taking on there. The subtitle being, for your listeners, A Cultural History of Humanity's Search for Meaning. I mean, just project that it does not come across my desk all that often in terms of the audaciousness of the project and its potential repercussions in terms of how we think about ourselves.
One other book that you directed my way, or at least I believe you directed my way, it gets a little hazy over the last 18 and a half years. I've been doing Spirit in Action. James Douglas. So there's JFK and the Unspeakable, but then Gandhi and the Unspeakable
exactly
came my
that.
Way. Gandhi and Unspeakable, 109 pages, as I recall. Such power and inspiration. Stuff I've heard about Gandhi all my life. There was the big movie in the 1980s. And,
sure.
And I'm Quaker, so that kind of orients me towards this kind of connection, East and West, and peace and living faithfully.
Nonviolence.
But Gandhi and the Unspeakable, wow. So there's just some books, even short ones like that, that just change me. I'm just offering up which ones there are for you.
I'm with you. And it's true. Gandhi is a hero of mine.
From your UCC days.
Definitely from my youth. You know, I don't know how much necessarily accords to my UCC upbringing and my father, certainly a man of spirit, Gandhi. But, you know, thinking of art and impactful art, I absolutely remember Attenborough's Gandhi. You know, every once in a while, I will put it on and my wife will say, oh, is it that time of year? you need to watch Gandhi again. Which, you know, if your listeners are familiar with it, it's a 3-hour movie. It's not a typical. So it's a bit of a commitment. And my family will move in and out of viewing, but I'm sort of plastered to it. So being able to represent that was a treat.
I love picking up trivia through my life. And one of the trivia bits that I picked up about the movie Gandhi was its Quaker connection. Of course, there were Quakers who worked with Gandhi, just as there were Methodists and everybody else. But Ben Kingsley was an attender of Quaker Meeting who starred in that. And one of the primary staff for producing the movie donated his income from the movie to the American Friends Service Committee, Quaker organization. So I love the way that we feed each other and change the world, and we get changed by what we encounter, like all these books. A couple last words. You said, you know, you were a recovering UCC preacher's kid.
Yeah.
That maybe is tongue in the cheek and maybe
a little bit.
But we all, I mean, I grew up Catholic, right? And I'm not Catholic anymore, but I got some richness out of that. Where did you go after you left UCC? Did you devolve right away into philosophy?
Devolve. That piece of my life, of course, remains current. It's a past piece, and yet it's current. Ever, you know, history's not past and it's not dead. It continues to live. I guess I became somebody more focused on matters of spirit than on matters of religion. I think that maybe is the biggest shift in my path. My parents, I remember being very specific. I was christened as a baby. I was not baptized. So a function of, you know, recognizing a parent's role in offering guidance, but not making a decision on behalf of the child. So that ethic was carried forward in my life. And for my two older brothers, all of us had to go to church on Sunday. All of us had to go through confirmation classes. And we were given the choice to become members of the church at the end of confirmation or not. To my father's, perhaps, surprise.
Chagrin?
Chagrin, yes, let's go with that. None of us became members of the church. And that said, I think we continued to live the values that we were taught and hold them as meaningful to varying degrees and in different ways. But it was simply not with what we might consider the trappings of religion. So I absolutely consider the work that I continue to do today in GLPR as part of a spiritual mission. It's not wrapped that way. It's not presented that way, but it has that meaning to me. And I take the responsibilities that I have both for my clients and for the mission that GLPR has in the world very seriously. And that I do take religiously.
Do you have a mission statement per se? You've got something on your website. And again, folks, you track down Peter Bermudez via glprbooks.com, links on northernspiritradio.org. For Northern Spirit Radio, our statement is, Northern Spirit Radio promotes world healing by broadcasting inspirational and educational voices of peace and social justice using the language of personal story, music, and spirituality. We put that together as the board, and that didn't happen until 8 years after I started Northern Spirit Radio stuff. I'm especially thankful to David Huber, who was president of our board at the time and who shepherded us to come to this refinement. I felt it like it's so well captured.
Yes, that's brilliant.
So what about GLPR?
So in a word, Mark, no. However, at least for the thinking of listeners, and you said it at the outset, I think of GLPR and Northern Spirit Radio as really almost hand in glove, very complementary forces, I hope, in the world. And I think certainly what I intend GLPR to do is very much akin to that. I mean, it happens to be a livelihood for me as well, but as my wife will attest, money doesn't stop me from doing the work that I feel is important. So that work is central. And I think, you know, with the exception maybe of music being a central means of getting this work out, GLPR's mission statement could be very similar to yours.
Well, I've certainly felt that compatibility when you and Gail previously have contacted me. I always felt that connection. And I'm so thankful for the work that GLPR has done. And again, first I was knowing Gail when she's the first one to contact me. So thankful for the voices and the books. I've mentioned just a few of them. Talking to Chuck Collins and others has been so rich for me. And then other names that people are not going to perhaps recognize. Jory Lewis was real fun. Peanuts for Slaves, just a rich assortment of people that you brought in, covering the world, covering peace and social justice, equality, all of these issues. Really, GLPR, your resume is great. You've helped so many people raise up those voices, changing the world in the way that we want to see it improve. And I'm really hoping to talk to the people that you just mentioned. I didn't talk to them about the voting, or I didn't talk about the water protectors. Those sound like vibrant voices. And for me, it's been particularly important to raise up an inspirational voice. So much of radio is trying to push your fear buttons. And mind you, there's things to be afraid of and to be concerned sure. about. One of the books that you haven't represented yet, as far as I know, is called From Warheads to Windmills. And I'm kind of hoping Tim and Wallace will contact you and maybe do that.
Thank you.
I'm going to be interviewing him in a couple of weeks. But there's so many people who need your work, lifting up, connecting, contacting them so that this world can change together. Because one of the things that we've lost as a society, not being members of the UCC church or something, we're not working with community in the same way. While there's a lot of integrity in being an individual, mm-hmm. if you can somehow find your spiritual center as part of a group, your power is greatly magnified, you know.
Absolutely.
Step by step, the longest march can be won. Many stones can form an arch, singly none. And by union, what we will shall be accomplished still. Drops of water turn the mill, singly none.
Nice.
You can sing that, can't you?
Not at the moment, but you, with
you
some
do
practice,
know the song,
Mark.
Right? You know the song, right?
I do not know the song.
Step by step, the longest march can be won. Yeah, you have to listen to
it. Would this have been in my hymnal as a child?
No, it's actually a union song, because I consider unions to be a spiritual organization.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Brilliant. Well, I mean, a pleasure, Mark. I appreciate your embrace of GLPR and GLPR clients. I mean, likewise, 18 years for you, I think marrying domains, again, that in my experience in media are not frequently married. I think there is greater justice done to them by connecting them. So thank you for bringing that voice to the public. I do hope that hand in hand, we are making a difference, you and I, huh?
Absolutely. And so I thank you, Peter, for the work. Again, folks, we've been speaking to Peter Bermudez of GLPR. Their website, glprbooks.com, links on northernspiritradio.org. Peter, it's always a delight to hear from you. Every time I get one of your emails and your phone calls, I say, there's good stuff ahead.
Ah, I thank you. I thank you. It's a pleasure, Mark.
Look for the links on Norden Spirit Radio, folks, and we'll see you next week for Spirit in Action.
The theme music for this program is Turning of the World, performed by Sarah Thompson. Check out all things Spirit in Action on northernspiritradio.org. Guests, links, stations, and a place for your feedback, suggestions, and support. Thanks for listening. I'm Mark Helpsmeet, and I hope you find deep roots to support you to grow steadily toward the light. This is Spirit in Action.
With every voice, with every